and Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here with the agricultural news. We'll hear from Pete Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, Amy Rochkus of the Farm Bureau will have a commentary on the estate tax. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit were lower, down 7.5 cents in the nearby December at 7.19 1/4, the March at 7.48 3/4, 7 3/4 lower, and May wheat at 7.58 3/4, down 7.5 cents. Next year's July at 7.32, down 7 for the day. December hard red in Kansas City, 9 1/4 lower at $7.50 a bushel. December corn futures, $4.96, a settlement price up 0.75 cents. March contracted 5.08 3/4, up 1/4. May at 5.13 1/2, a quarter higher. July corn at 5.17, unchanged. September at 4.90 1/4, 3/4 higher. Next year's December at $4.72, up 1/4. November beans, 10.36 1/4, down 6 1/4 today. January at 10.46, down 6 3/4. March at 10.54, 6 3/4 lower. And the May beans at 10.57 1/4, 6.5 lower. July at 10.61 3/4, down 6.5 cents as well. October bean meal futures down $1.40 at $2.93.10. October bean oil futures at $41.36, down 25 cents on the day. From the CME Group livestock side, October live cattle futures $98.70, 57.5 cents higher. December at $101.45, up 67.5. September feeder cattle were higher as well, up 42.5 at 112.22.5. October at 112.7 cents, 57.5 cents higher. And the October lean hogs at $78.20, 100 pounds, down $1.05 today. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. October crude oil futures, $74.52 a barrel, down $1.50. Ethanol at $2.73 of a cent a gallon, that's down 0.1 cents. Natural gas at $4.65, up 7 cents for the day. October heating oil or diesel fuel down 3 4/10 at $2.98 a cent. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,271.90, a settlement price there up $5.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average currently stands at 10,581. It's just about 9 points higher. And the U.S. dollar today at 81.24 is down 0.20. The CRB index at 278.69, down 0.36 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say skies this afternoon in Urbana-Champaign should be mostly cloudy, a high near 73 degrees. Winds out of the northwest between 14 and 17 miles an hour. They'll gust up to 23 tonight. There'll be some patchy fog after 1 a.m. in the morning. Otherwise, partly cloudy, a low around 48 degrees. Northwest winds between 3 and 8 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny, a high near 78. Calm winds becoming west-southwest around 5 miles an hour. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low 57. South-southeast winds between 3 and 5. Saturday, partly sunny skies, a high near 81. South winds between 3 and 9 miles an hour. And Saturday night, mostly cloudy, with a low of 57 degrees. The extended forecast says Sunday it'll be partly sunny, mostly sunny on Monday, Tuesday mostly sunny, and partly sunny on Wednesday. We'll have highs in that period from the low 70s to the mid 80s. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, is on the phone line with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Todd.
Let's talk a little bit. I know you're on the road today. First, where are you?
Well, I'm south of Springfield right now, on my way to Texas.
Oh, well, you're heading to homestead country in that case, I suppose.
Well, yeah, my daughter gets her Aggie ring this weekend, so I'm going down for that ceremony.
Oh, well, congratulations to her and to you, and I hope you don't have too many payments left on it.
Well, my son just started, so I got 4 more years.
Well, there you go. I've got 3 in high school. I'm looking for the same thing eventually, too. Okay, let's talk about what's been happening in the marketplace. We were in Mazan a couple of days ago, and one of the things that struck me as we were having our discussions with the farmers and the brokers along for that particular ride in the Outlook panel was that when we went to try to ration this crop, if that would be needed, for corn in particular, that it didn't appear anybody would be easily budged. What does that mean, and is that a proper assumption?
Well, that's what the market, I think, has taken some time out for, is that we have reached up against this $5 area. We haven't penetrated it yet. That's a psychological resistance point until we're above it. We did notice, though, today that your export demand has slowed here over the past 10 days with the weekly sales. So you have to say that maybe some of the world buyers have at least stepped aside for a moment or two until they hear a little bit more about yield. So, but I think, you know, when you look at the livestock sector, that's where some rationing may take place. I think the first people to kind of watch for would be the cattle feedlots. I think the hog and the chicken guys can kind of sweat it out for a while. And, of course, the other segment is you'll have to probably keep an eye on ethanol grind. And, of course, you know, what happens in Washington, whether or not the ethanol credit, blender's credit is extended or not. And, you know, it, from a political point of view, it almost looks like maybe nothing might not get done in Washington. So you have to worry a little bit about that, Todd.
Yeah, so these are the conclusions that I think we came up with as a group, plus one other that might be in trouble along the way. So you had the cattle producers that might end up in trouble, the ethanol folks that might have a real problem on their hands, and the third one was the dairy industry that would possibly come under a pretty tight squeeze. And under what conditions do you think all of those things might happen?
Well, my guess is that at least in the past, when we've had to ration inventories, and I think this is, you know, we don't want to get the cart before the horse,
right.
And we don't exactly know how big a crop this really is. We do have a couple reports that we got to go through, the stocks report here at the end of the month, to see whether or not how much inventory we're actually carrying in and whether or not that changes any. And like I said, we need to kind of get a little better feel of what's going on in the Western Corn Belt, Northern Corn Belt, where the good yields are. But my guess is if the time comes that we have to ration, the market really doesn't have much mercy on anybody. And, you know, it spikes up to a level where it just, you know, brings a lot of emotion and a lot of panic into the situation. But you also got to keep in mind is that we don't have to ration right away. We can maybe chug along at a higher price and see if a sideways type market ration supplies, and then if it doesn't, then the market may have to take a higher spike later. But you'll just have to take one week at a time. But I think for the time being here, the trade wants to know a little more certainty, I think, about supply before it makes any big moves one way or the other.
Is it safe to say at this point that the price of corn has not really begun to ration very much, if at all?
No, I don't think it's rationed in the traditional sense that you've seen people cut back on their usage for one reason or the other. I think at this point, you know, like either you cut livestock numbers or you shut down ethanol grind facilities, you liquidate, you know, hogs or chicken. We haven't seen none of that. The only thing that we've seen, and it just, like I said, it just could be a glimpse, is at least your world buyers have stepped aside for a week or two. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're cutting back on demand any, is that they just maybe took a time out with our weekly export sales past week.
It seemed when we were in Mazan, and I'll go back to this one again, that if you had to summarize the way things sounded, and you tell me whether you agree with this as your position or not, that they were friendly to the market, at least short term, until things either rationed or they just leveled out. One of the two of those things might happen.
Well, I guess I would take a little different position. I think we need to see whether or not supply-demand balance sheet keeps tightening. And I think there's still an underlining belief that the supply-demand balance sheet in corn is still tightening. And that's why the October crop report is probably going to be somewhat important to see if we continue to tighten or if we begin to loosen things up a little bit. Yeah, I think the trade's going to want to see some evidence that we've rationed, and that's really hard to pinpoint. You just don't say, oh, today we did it.
Right.
That is more of a 30-day or 60-day, and usually that explains why the market's gone down after 30 days. you don't, when the market does take its pause, you don't know if it's just a pause, a corrective pause in an ongoing bull market, or the early beginnings of the bear market. And that's unfortunately, but you know, the market will tell us after it's done the job. That doesn't help us out on trying to, you know, mark our crop up at these upper price levels anyway.
Before we get to the crop production report, we have the quarterly grain stocks report. It's the last one for the marketing year, for the last marketing year. Do you think that will have very many important numbers in it?
Well, it could. Usually stocks reports are good reports to kind of look back and tell you this is why the market did what it did, I think, because they're 30 days behind. So the market has already worked the supply-demand changes that actually show up in those stocks reports. But, I mean, there is some suspicion whether or not last year's production number was as high as USDA has it on the books. There and/or there is some suspicion whether or not we used as much in the feed area as what's on the book. So hopefully the stocks report can maybe clean that up a little bit, or it may create more doubts. But the livestock feed and residual use is questionable, you know, we'll have to kind of see you know, what this last quarter actually did materialize in the marketing year. But there's always room for you know, a couple, 100 to 150 million bushel adjustment in corn. I'm not sure that makes a difference at this point, as long as the trade is focused on a short crop.
Would you advise end users to purchase corn or beans or meal at this point?
No. What at this point, I think it's kind of too late to panic.
Mm-hmm.
To buy feed inputs, I would be more inclined to kind of stay in the mouth. There's some technical systems that I would be watching to give me an additional buys or whatnot. No, I think when you look at the timing of this, you hear the bean yields, what we're hearing, the bean yields, I would probably tell people to kind of be patient. An end user, though, you know, he's using so many bushels per day, so he does have to have some inventory on the books. But I would not go out and advise him to buy very much length. I would probably keep it reasonably short until I knew a little bit more about the overall supply-demand picture.
We have not touched on soybeans. I haven't really left time for it, but take them up shortly for me.
Well, soybeans, yields are good. The trade is really watching Iowa to see whether or not those yields hold up as good as what we're hearing here in the eastern Corn Belt. Demand's good, but the focus is quickly going to shift to South America and any kind of weather issues that might develop when they begin to plant their crop and we get that off and running.
Thanks much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the ag news for the afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, USDA says U.S. farmers are eligible for up to $630 million in disaster aid for crop and livestock losses last year. USDA said it would help cotton, rice, soybean, and sweet potato growers in selected counties if they lost at least 5% of their crop. Aid also will be available to poultry and aquaculture growers. Maximum payment is $100,000. The 5% trigger for aid is lower than the one-third loss usually required. Farmers can apply for aid after USDA writes a rule for the program and money becomes available in the fiscal year beginning October 1st. The U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday passed a bill to renew a mandatory livestock price reporting law and extend coverage to wholesale pork cuts and pork exports, and sent the bill to President Barack Obama to sign. Farm groups and meat packers supported the five-year extension of the price reporting law, which expires on September 30th. Beside the extension of coverage to wholesale pork cuts and pork exports, the bill requires the Agriculture Department to create an electronic system for reporting daily on dairy product prices. The Obama administration is signaling it plans to take a tougher stance with China on trade issues, including demanding that Beijing move more quickly to reform its currency system. In testimony prepared for the two congressional hearings today, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner criticized a variety of Chinese economic policies, from Beijing's currency system to what he said was widespread piracy of U.S. products and the erection of numerous barriers that prevent U.S. companies from operating in China. On Wednesday, U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk announced that the administration was filing two new trade cases against China before the Geneva-based WTO, which oversees the rules of global trade. In one of the WTO cases, the administration said China was discriminating against U.S. credit and debt card companies in favor of a state-owned financial services firm. The other case contends that China had improperly imposed trade sanctions on a type of U.S.-made flat-rolled steel. The Obama administration laid out details of a strategy to double U.S. exports over 5 years today, recommending ways to boost commerce, but steering clear of timetables for advancing stalled free trade agreements. U.S. officials say opening markets and enforcing existing trade pacts are part of the process of increasing exports, but the report did not lay out a timetable for wrapping up free trade pacts with Colombia and Panama. The report's recommendations include implementing a government-wide export promotion strategy for markets in Colombia, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Turkey, and Vietnam. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. Both programs you can find anytime you'd like on our website and listen to them there or have them downloaded to your computer automatically as a podcast. Just visit willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, Amy Rochkus is here with a commentary from the Illinois Farm Bureau on the estate tax.
Everyone must act together to stop the estate tax clock before time runs out. If Congress fails to act, the estate tax will return with a vengeance on New Year's Day 2011. Congressional inaction means any farm estate with land and other assets exceeding the $1 million personal exemption or the $2 million for a couple exemption will be taxed at an astronomical 55% rate. If Congress does not act on the death tax before the end of the year, the United States Department of Agriculture estimates 10 times more farm estates will be forced to file estate tax returns next year compared to last year. The estate tax burden falls heavily on farmers because farming takes a lot of capital assets, such as land and equipment, to generate the same dollar in income that another type of business could generate with less. The death of a loved one often requires remaining family members to make some hard decisions, and sometimes those decisions will determine the future of the family farming operation. The estate tax can destroy family businesses when the tax forces surviving family members to sell land, buildings, or equipment to generate enough money to pay the death tax. Senators Blanche Lincoln and John Kyle introduced an amendment to gradually increase the personal exemption from $3.5 million to $5 million over the next 10 years. The tax rate would also drop from 45% to 35%. A higher exemption and lower rates will give family farms a better chance to remain in operation when they are transferred from one generation to the next. Estate tax reform must also include stepped-up basis, which limits the amount of property value appreciation that is subject to capital gains taxes if the assets are sold. Because farmland typically is held by one owner for several decades, setting the basis on the value of the farm on the date of the owner's death under stepped-up basis is an important tax provision for surviving family partners. Time is running out for Congress to act. We ask you, please take time to call Senators Durbin and Senator Burris and ask them to vote for the Lincoln-Kyle Amendment. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station. If you'd like to comment, you can give us a call at 217-333-9697. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, I'll return with a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Cinnamon Raisin Bread Day. It's also Feast of St. Cornelius, patron of cattle and domestic animals. On this day in agricultural history in 1630, the town of Shawmut changed its name to Boston. If not for this, we might be eating Shawmut baked beans and Shawmut cream pie. In 1736, Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit died. Fahrenheit, a German physicist, invented the Fahrenheit temperature scale thermometer. It was the first thermometer to use mercury instead of alcohol, which also extended the temperature range of thermometers. He also discovered that each liquid has a different boiling point that would change with atmospheric pressure. In 1903, Luther Crowell died, an American inventor. He obtained over 280 patents, and perhaps is best known for designing a machine to make the square-bottom paper bag still in use today. And in 1919, Marvin P. Middlemark was born. He invented the TV rabbit ear antenna and, among other minor inventions, a water-powered potato peeler. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is a production of Illinois Public Media. If you'd like to hear any of our programming, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report each and every day, it's posted not long after it airs on our radio station to WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is Thursday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural weather forecast. On the phone line with us today, Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the third Thursday event. National Weather Service always releases a long-term forecast. What's it look like?
Well, they're going a little bit with persistence. I'm not so sure I agree with this one. But anyway, here's what the forecast is for October. They have most of the U.S. above normal temperatures. That's from the Rockies right through New England. Only the Pacific Coast, they have below normal temperatures. And then in the southeast and in between the Pacific Coast and the Rockies, they have equal chances, meaning normal type of weather. For precipitation, they've got it dry in the Midwest. They have it dry in the southwest. They have it wet from Washington and Oregon eastward into the Dakotas. And then they have some showers along the South Atlantic and Mid-Atlantic coast. Actually, the coastal areas, they have above normal precipitation anywhere from Texas through Florida and up the coast to New England. So that's their one-month forecast for October. I suspect that the precipitation forecast they're talking about on the coast has something to do with their expectation of some tropical activity. So far, we've had a lot of storms, but nothing has hit the U.S. Mainland, and so far, even with three hurricanes going in the tropics today, one in the Gulf, two in the Atlantic, none of those three are scheduled to impact the U.S. at all. For the three-month forecast, we have warm temperatures from the southwest through the Midwest into the Great Lakes in the Northeast. In other words, this is October, November, and December. They have mild conditions for most of the U.S. Once again, just the Pacific coast they have with below normal temperatures. Precipitation, they have equal chances across the northern tier of states from the Dakotas eastward to the Atlantic coast, dry in the south and wet in the Pacific Northwest. So that's pretty much the long-range outlook. My guess is that we are going to see some below normal temperatures start to show up as we get into the latter part of fall. I think we're in for a cold winter in the Midwest this winter.
And you do disagree with some of it. Do you disagree with the percentage part or the precipitation part of it?
Precipitation part looks okay. I think it is going to be dry in the Midwest during October, which we could use a little dry weather. And then and they're going for equal chances, which is essentially a no forecast on precipitation. So normal, I'll settle for normal. I think the cold weather will kind of suppress the precipitation a bit as we approach winter.
What do you see, and we don't have a lot of time yet, but what do you see for the next few days here in the Midwest?
Well, the next few days, we've just had a cold front move through. A low-pressure system over Michigan is moving on eastward, taking showers with it. We've got cloudy and cooler weather following in the wake of that. So tonight and tomorrow, it'll be cool with some partly cloudy conditions. A front comes along, though, right away behind it. So Friday night, we get some showers across Iowa. Friday night and Saturday, they come across Illinois. And then after that, the showers are gone for most of the week, especially in the central and southern portions of the Midwest. Temperatures will be near or a little below normal the next couple of days, and then we have them rising above normal in the central Illinois and southern Illinois areas right through the end of the week, with only a few showers likely at times, and those will be confined to northern areas and probably the Great Lakes areas.
Thanks much.
My pleasure.
That's Pete Levitt. The Farming World is next. You're listening to the Farming World News and Interviews from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us today. From the National Pork Board in Des Moines, Iowa, Stave C. Rebels. She's the manager of certification programs for the National Pork Board. Ms. Rebels, thank you so much for being with us today. We do appreciate you taking the time.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me.
What does the manager at this manager of certification programs at the National Pork Board do?
Well, I'm responsible for the day-to-day management and oversight of the industry, the three key industry certification programs: Pork Quality Assurance Plus, also known as PQA Plus, Youth Pork Quality Assurance Plus, or Youth PQA Plus, and the Transport Quality Assurance, or TQA. And so I manage the day-to-day administration and delivery of those programs, as well as development of all of the material that go to support them.
And two questions up front. Who's the target audience for those programs? And maybe you can start with a broader target audience. And then what is the National Pork Board?
Sure. The PQA Plus and Youth PQA Plus program is really our food safety and animal well-being education program. And so it is intended for anyone who works in the production of pork. So that's all pork producers, owners, employees, and anyone that may be involved in any way with producing pork. The Transport Quality Assurance Program, TQA, is intended for anyone who transports or handles pigs during unloading or unloading, and is intended to ensure the well-being of animals while loading, unloading, and in between during transport.
And the National Pork Board is in existence for what reason?
The National Pork Board has three main charges. That is to promote domestic demand for pork, as well as to implement research priorities for the pork industry and deliver education programs for pork producers.
And so why do we have the PQA programs then?
PQA is a way for pork producers to learn what's current and best practices in their industry. It's a way to ensure on-farm food safety of pork that's produced, as well as ensure the well-being of our animals. It's important to be able to demonstrate that pork producers are involved in this program to our customers, folks like food service and retail industries, as well as the end consumer, are becoming increasingly concerned with where their pork comes from and how it's produced, and they just want to know that it's being done right.
How many participate in the PQA programs?
We have currently there are approximately 49,000 pork producers certified in PQA Plus, as well as over 35,000 youth that are certified through Youth PQA Plus.
All right, so now let's take up these PQA or Pork Quality Assurance programs. What are they designed to do and to aid the producers and the youth and the transport folks with?
They're intended to provide producers and their employees with best practices and correct procedures and practices to use on-farm in order to ensure food safety and animal well-being. So, for example, the PQA Plus program would cover a topic such as using appropriate withdrawal times when using medications. It also covers topics such as responsible antibiotic use and using a veterinarian-client-patient relationship to manage the health of the herd. Those types of things are important for ensuring food safety. And then in the program, we also cover things like ensuring that animals have appropriate body space, that they have a correct body condition score, things like that that are important for the animal's well-being are also covered in the program. So really it's to ensure that the product that we're producing is safe and that it's done in a responsible way that's that's important for the animal's well-being.
Does the consumer know in any way about the certification program, or is it a program mostly for internal use? Is it a program that the packers look for when they're purchasing product, that the retailers look for when they're purchasing from the wholesalers? What good does the program do?
Yes. Well, I would say that the most important audience that this program has, number one is producers, to make sure that everyone is doing things, according to best practices and science. But then number two, it's very important that we be able to demonstrate to retailers and food service that pork producers are doing these things, because they are becoming increasingly interested in how pork is produced. They hear the same talking points and messages from animal rights groups and others that are not necessarily working with our industry, but rather against it. And so this is a way for us to be able to give them something to rely on, some information that they can go back to those other outside groups who may be trying to work against us and say, pork producers, they are doing the right thing. They are raising their pork in a responsible manner.
Okay, so I am a pork producer, and I come to you, and I'd like to be in the PQA Plus program. What's the first thing you tell me?
The first thing that I would recommend you do is go to our website, and that is www.pork.org. There's a link at the very top of the page that says certifications, and there at that link you can get information on PQA Plus, Youth PQA Plus, and TQA. And the key thing to do there is to use our locator tool found at that website and find a PQA Plus or TQA advisor in your area. And that advisor is who will deliver the training for you. They will come out and conduct your site assessment and then enter your site assessment data into the system so that you will officially be designated as having been site assessed. If you don't have internet access or just don't have time to hop on the internet, you can also call our 800 number. That number is 1-800-456-7675. And the Pork Checkoff Service Center will be happy to help you and to answer any other questions that you might have about the programs.
Okay, so I've gone to the website. I've found an advisor. They've come out. What do they do with me? And it looks to me like this was modeled after the HACCP, or the Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point programs, that that are used throughout the food production industry as food safety. So what happens once I take those first steps and they come out to the farm?
Sure. PQA, the original PQA program was developed back in 1989, and it was based on HACCP principles. And it was strictly, at that time, a food safety program. In 2007, animal well-being was added to the content, and at that time, the site assessment piece of the program was also added. And so when you go through the training program, your training, the content will focus on those various HACCP principles, everything that you do on farm that will impact food safety. And then it will also talk you through the various care and well-being principles that are looked at when assessing the animal well-being. And so those care and well-being principles are really what is assessed when a PQA Plus advisor comes out to the farm. And so they'll walk through and they'll look at your records to see if you have a veterinarian client patient relationship. They'll look at your medication and treatment records, your caretaker training, your emergency action plan, and an emergency backup system. Those are all records and emergency support. They'll also look to see that you have some sort of records that you have observed the animals on a daily basis. Daily observation records are very important. They'll then take a look at the animals. They'll do a physical evaluation of the animals, look at things like lameness, skin lesions, wounds, and swine behavior in general. They'll look at body condition score as well as body space for the animals. Then they'll also take a look to see that you have a written euthanasia plan and that your plan is done correctly based on the guide that is produced by the AASV, the American Association of Swine Veterinarians. It's important to make sure that those guidelines are in place. They'll look to make sure that the facilities are in good repair, flooring, fencing, equipment, all of those things. Next, they'll make sure that you have information and are doing things according to proper animal handling best practices. They'll look at ventilation to make sure that the temperature and the air quality within the barn is appropriate. And then finally, they'll ensure that there are no willful acts of abuse that are occurring on that site.
So as I gather, the PQA and then the PQA Plus program different in just really one way. PQA is the program that took care of, and I'll say it simply, I think, the quality of the pork or the inputs into the pork, what that animal was ingesting, how it was treated in terms of medicines and such, so that eventual pork product would be safe and under HACCP programs would be safe. And then the PQA Plus added to that the environmental or living space of the animal and transport as well.
Right. Yes. The PQA Plus, really when that plus was added, it was due to the animal well-being factors that were added into the program as well as the site assessment. Prior to when PQA Plus was rolled out, there was not a site assessment component to the program. It was strictly a training program.
Who comes up with the guidelines?
The guidelines are based on best industry information. Our science and technology department here at the National Pork Board, who manages all of our research, as well as all of our technical committees, they provide all of the content for the program and guide the program to make sure that it is technically and scientifically sound.
What are the places like PETA and environment and animal activists think about the PQA Plus program? Do they think it's okay, a step in the right direction? Do they not care? Do they think it's just a front? What do they say about it?
Well, I haven't actually heard what they think about it. I would say that those types of groups, PETA and the Humane Society of the United States, their goal is to eliminate animal agriculture, so they have a very vegan agenda, and so this program won't necessarily help them accomplish that agenda.
Okay, so they probably wouldn't care about the program one way or the other. I didn't know whether they had looked at the program and whether you'd heard feedback from them or not. We'll have some more discussion about the youth program and the transportation program when we come back. We're talking with Stacy Revels this afternoon. She's the manager of certification programs for the National Pork Board.
It's National Cinnamon Raisin Bread Day. It's also Feast of St. Cornelius, patron of cattle and domestic animals. On this day in agricultural history in 1630, the town of Shawmut changed its name to Boston. If not for this, we might be eating Shawmut baked beans and Shawmut cream pie. In 1736, Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit died. Fahrenheit, a German physicist, invented the Fahrenheit temperature scale thermometer. It was the first thermometer to use mercury instead of alcohol, which also extended the temperature range of thermometers. He also discovered that each liquid has a different boiling point that would change with atmospheric pressure. In 1903, Luther Crowell died, an American inventor. He obtained over 280 patents and perhaps is best known for designing a machine to make the square bottom paper bag still in use today. And in 1919, Marvin P. Middlemark was born. He invented the TV rabbit ear antenna and, among other minor inventions, a water-powered potato peeler. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tom Testale in Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're talking today with Stacy Revel. She's the manager of certification programs at the National Pork Board. Our discussion centering on their PQA, or Pork Quality Assurance Programs, and PQA Plus. There's a couple of others, transportation and youth. Let's take up transportation, Ms. Revels. That's getting the animal, I suppose, from the production facility to the processing facility. Are there other things involved, and what does it mean?
Yes, so Transport Quality Assurance, or TQA, involves everything that the pig might encounter during transportation. So everything from loading to unloading, and the transportation that happens in between. It covers topics such as basic pig behavior and handling of the pig, loading and unloading best practices, transportation such as space recommendations, weather conditions, fitness of the pig and whether it's in proper condition to transport to begin with, biosecurity considerations, having an emergency response plan and what to do in the event that an emergency should occur when on the road. We also cover the laws and regulations that are important for transporters to be aware of, as well as just general attitude and rules and responsibilities for transporters. So those are kind of the main topics that we cover within TQA.
So we had 49,000 in the PQA Plus program. How many in TQA?
We have approximately 27,000 folks that are certified in TQA, and so those may be not only transporters or haulers, but they could also be folks that work on farm that are responsible for loading pigs, or even folks that work at packing plants and are responsible for unloading pigs.
So this is all aimed at the welfare of the animal as it's being transported from one place to the other. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. Animal well-being during transport is the primary goal of TQA.
And then talk about the youth program for me.
Youth PQA Plus is really, it mirrors the content that's found within PQA Plus, but it's geared toward a younger audience. We have a large youth population involved in producing swine. Many of them produce them maybe one or two pigs a year for their local county fairs. And some may produce, you know, quite a few more than that and are involved in showing livestock on a national level. But really that Youth PQA Plus program is intended for anyone who's involved with producing pigs, whether it's for show or maybe on their family's farm, and anyone between the ages of 8 years old and 19 years old.
And how many do you have that participate in this program?
There are just over 35,000 youth that are certified in Youth PQA Plus, and that's in addition to youth that may be certified within their state multi-species quality assurance programs. There are 6 states that have a multi-species quality assurance program, so programs that might include beef or sheep, poultry, in some cases, production, they might have programs that encompass more than just pork quality assurance.
And how's this program delivered?
The Youth PQA Plus program is delivered by extension educators, ag educators, and veterinarians. And it is administered a lot like the Pork Quality Assurance Plus or PQA Plus program, where an advisor is responsible for educating youth, conducting training sessions, and making sure that youth have access to all of the information that they need to produce pork in a responsible manner.
So when they do this, and you're talking about juniors or youth, and they maybe have one or two hogs that, as you said, they're raising for the county fair, what kinds of things are they taught?
The information that they're taught is really exactly the same as that in the PQA Plus program. So we go through the same food safety guidelines, you know, responsible antibiotic use, veterinarian client patient relationship, those types of things. But within the youth training, the materials are written at a slightly different level to accommodate the reading level of most youth. And in addition, we also provide recommended activities and things that trainers can incorporate into the training to make it a little bit more interactive and designed specifically for youth.
Have you been able to assess whether this program has been valuable or not?
Oh, absolutely. This program has continued to strengthen in terms of numbers of folks that are becoming certified in it, as well as many of your national and even local fairs are beginning to require certification in Youth PQA Plus. Fairs see it as a way to make sure that their youth are getting the education that they need to produce pork in a responsible manner. And it's just a excellent education program for youth, especially those who may not have a lot of experience already with livestock. It's a good way for them to learn basic principles of animal husbandry and animal care.
Ms. Revels, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Stacy Revels is the Manager of Certification Programs at the National Pork Board. We've been talking about the PQA, or Pork Quality Assurance Programs, that the Pork Board oversees. I'm University of
From Todd Stuart Gleason, Peterson, since 1985, offering strategic Illinois commodity Public consulting Media. And marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.